You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. I'm Eric Clay, your host, and our guest on this hour is Devin Carrington. Devin, it's good to have you here this morning.
It's good to be here. I'm super excited and made it down that hill in the rain, but we're super excited to be here.
Good. So the question we start with at the beginning of every show is, who are you? What do we need to know, broad strokes, about the qualities you aspire to live by, what you've done, who you, you know, the labels you wear? What do we need to know to start this conversation?
Sure. That's something I've been thinking about a lot since I read your email, is that initial question of who am I? And I think a lot about just everything I've done in my life. You know, I've played a little bit of high school football where I was a lineman, you know, I was protecting the quarterback. And then I think about a lot of the things that I did, extracurricular activities at, you know, in high school that weren't necessarily great choices, but I did a lot of protecting. And then I think of how protective I am of my family. And I've always see myself as that, like a protector. I think I've always told my friends, like, once you're a friend of mine, like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, I have your back no matter what.
Yeah.
And so I think that bled into the type of work that I do. I'm in a very helping profession. I work up at Cornell. And so I work in residence life, where formerly I was a residence hall director, recently was promoted to an assistant director, where I looked out for students, advised students in where they live. And now I've gone to advocating and advising for staff. Hopefully, I've only been in my second week. So this is
working now predominantly with staff.
Yes. Yeah. So I supervise a team of hall directors who then in turn work with the students. And I'm hoping to take that and really just increase my values, increase my worth, and increase the things that I look forward to at work every day, which is advocating and supporting my peers, my colleagues, my constituents, like whoever I'm serving. I want to be able to be that person for them. And so that's my goal. I think that's ultimately been who I am. When I think of that question, from the beginning, I think of that. I remember as a very little kid wanting to be a cop because of the idea of protecting and serving, upholding the law, but just doing the community.
Taking care of the people.
Yeah, taking care of the people. That community policing, that, you know, walking around, getting to know folks. I know we had a lot of officers in my neighborhood who did that. I had a family of, my uncle was a detective, my mom works at NYPD. And so I always wanted to do that. And once I went to college and figured out that wasn't what I wanted to do.
Right, yeah.
Because I wanted to, like, get the positive side of people.
Sure.
Not only the negative side. And so it's still maintained that thread throughout my life of, like, wanting to serve and help others.
Right, right. And you're also a relatively new dad.
Yes, yeah, yes, yes. So I do have a 9-month-old, his name is Jamal Vicente. He is adorable, absolutely adorable. And so now that has become more of a priority in my life.
So you were a partnered person, and now you're a partner with child.
Yes, which is awesome. I can't think of any other word than say it's awesome. Like, I have, it comes, you know, it comes with challenges. Obviously, we're both young, we're both new parents. We both remember, like, we don't necessarily have great examples, right, of, like, parenthood and partnership, but, you know, we're doing what we think is best. And I think what we think is best has been working totally fine. He's a really happy baby. You can't get him to not smile. He only gets upset when he's tired and when he's hungry. And that's we all do.
Normal, you know, life.
That's normal human being behavior. He's great. We have a great support system here with his godparents and a bunch of colleagues and friends. And my family is really close by. So we're just super blessed, super grateful to have this experience. And I think that's adding more to who I am, is now that I'm not just this person that's protecting and serving community. I have to now shift that also to my family.
Right. Right. And you also have to be protected by. I mean, one of the biggest issues for young parents is to not have deep enough backup.
Yes.
To step in, to take some of the stress, to you know, you're doing it the way you feel right. Maybe very few of us have had really good parental models, but in terms of how to do it, and we're living in a different world than we grew up in.
Right.
So we've got to make it up, but we need people around us, and that's what you're talking about, and you're able to make that transition.
Yeah, and that's the biggest part, is that community. I think that's what's keeping us here in Ithaca. You know, it's something that a lot of my colleagues may not enjoy Ithaca. You know, there's not much for young professionals, I would say, to do, which I hope
it's not a big urban environment.
No, I've found it to be great. I've been able to DJ in town, which is a big passion of mine as well, which has been phenomenal, great way to, for me to de-stress, for me to, yeah, make some extra cash, but for me to also get into the community and like meet other folks. Mm-hmm. That's been really great. My partner has found a CrossFit in town, and so she's able to develop a community with that and develop more of a healthy lifestyle, brings that stuff home. And so mm-hmm. we're able to, you know, make better choices with our health, with our eating, with a lot of our, you know, physical activity and things we do as a family, which then our son can then hopefully carry on and not make the same like choices, poor decisions we made in terms of our diet growing up. Yeah. So we've both been able to develop somewhat of a community outside of where we work. We both work at Cornell. And so we're both able to have that community, which has been phenomenal. And to me, it's to know from where I've come from to where I am now and to have like a stable family, a community outside of work, a stable job. I have more money than I've ever had before, mm-hmm. you know, and so to have that feeling of where I've come from is just, I can't be proud of myself, yeah. finally. You know?
Right. And you've made that step out mm-hmm. and up in a sense. But you also kind of have to kind of consolidate there because you've, you know, have got a child and you got a new role and you got a, you know, new role at work. I mean, it's the way life goes.
Yeah. We're in a constant stage of like status of transition. I feel like, with the new baby and making new changes in the house, making sure like the house is baby proof and making sure we got everything for him.
Because now he's mobile.
Yeah, now he's really mobile. And so we're doing all that. And then now with this new job, as a residence hall director for the college town halls, I lived in. I mm-hmm. was a part of my position was to live in the residence halls, supervise the RAs, advise the students. And so now with this new role, I have to move out.
Right.
And so that's where we're currently at right now is like trying to figure out what that looks like. Mm-hmm. We're in the stage of trying to close on the house right now. So that's a whole overwhelming piece for both of us because we're once again first time everything.
Right.
So you know, first time home buyers, first time everything. Yeah, I just can't help but get overwhelmed when we talk about this stuff. I'm like, wait, what? Who do we have to? A lawyer? What do we need a lawyer for? And so it's very fun, but it's also very challenging.
Right. And it's and a little scary.
Yeah.
I mean, when you said he's awesome, you know, that stage in life for me is awesome and awful. That word awe. It can mean a lot of like oh hell and like oh wow all at the same time
definitely he's fun, a lot of fun, but like you said, he, you know, it can't have its awful moments. I think it can have its moments when we're both tired. My transition at work has made me like I'm exhausted right now because I'm also in charge of a summer program right now on campus called Summer College where we work with the high school students. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a lot this summer.
And is this with all the different colleges, the high school students that are coming into like the hotel school, the ag school, the arts college?
Yeah, so we have about, you know, throughout our program, 1,700 kids will come through. And for with that, summer. For wow. the summer. For,
I didn't realize it was that big.
Yeah, so for, there are two sessions. So there's, technically there's three different sessions a mm-hmm. student can go through. There's a full six-week session. We have students who stay here for the full 6 weeks of the program. We have two three-week sessions. So mm-hmm. students come the first 3 weeks, leave. Come for the second 3 weeks, leave. And then we have a two-week program that is for robotics. So there's like a specific robotics group that comes and does a two-week program with us.
Yeah, cool. Well, you brought music, and since you're the DJ, do you want to introduce your music?
Sure, yeah. So the first song that we're going to play is Juicy by Notorious B.I.G. It's probably one of my favorite songs of all time. It's probably one of the first songs I knew all the words to as a kid. I'm not going to do that today. But yeah, it's just something that's always stuck with me of like, you know, never forgetting where you came from and then getting to that place where you feel comfortable and you can feel like you are some semblance of success, and everyone defines that differently. And so that's what this song really says to me.
Here we go.
Yeah, this album is dedicated to all the teachers that told me I never amount to nothing. To all the people that lived above the buildings that I was hustling from that called the police on me when I was just trying to make some money to feed my daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
And to all my peoples in the struggle, you know what I'm saying? It's all good, baby.
Shake it.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? Da-ha, da-ha. You never thought that hip-hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Peace to Ron G, Brucey B, Kid Capri, Funk Master Flex, Love Bug Star Ski. I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know, you know. I made the change from a common thief to up close and personal with Robin Leach. Yeah. And I'm far from cheap. I smoke stuff with my peeps all day. Spread love, it's the Brooklyn way. The Moet and Alizé keep me pissy. Girls used to diss me, now they write letters cause they miss me. I never thought it could happen, this rapping stuff. I was too used to packing gats and stuff. Now honeys play me close like butter play toast. From the Mississippi down to the East Coast. Condos in Queens, in dough for weeks. Sold out seats to hear Biggie Small speak. Living life without fear. Putting 5 carats in my baby girl ear. Lunches, brunches, interviews by the pool. Considered a fool cause I dropped out of high school. Stereotypes of a black male misunderstood. And it's still all good, And if you don't know, now you know. You know. Sega Genesis. When I was dead broke, man, I couldn't picture this. 50-inch screen, money green, leather sofa. Got 2 rides, a limousine with the chauffeur. Phone bill about 2 G's flat. No need to worry, my accountant handles that. And my whole crew is lounging. Celebrating every day, no more public housing. Thinking back on my one-room shack. Now my mom pimps a act with minks on her back. And she loves to show me off, of course. Smiles every time my face is up in the sauce. We used to fuss when the landlord dissed us. No heat, wonder why Christmas missed us. Birthdays was the worst days. Now we sip champagne when we thirsty. Damn right, I like the life I live. Cause I went from negative to positive. And it's all good. And if you don't know, now you know, you know, you know. And if you don't know, now you know, you know.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest is Devin Carrington. So, Devin, given the life you value now, and it's a rich life, what were some of the things that you had to experience, had to learn to know that this is the life you want to be living now?
Sure, that's a great question. I think that takes me back to actually a little bit of my time in graduate school, and then a little bit of the time in the school I used to work at before coming to Cornell. Mm-hmm. I actually did not realize this, but for a lot of my life, I caught myself having like different moods, you know, depending on how mm-hmm. I wake up. Either I was extremely antisocial or I was ready to, you know, engage and interact. And in college actually helped me fight a lot of that. In college, I went to Bridgewater State University. I did a lot of things that pushed me out of my comfort zone. And so I did a lot of things like orientation leader, resident advisor, club president. You know, I ran for homecoming king, hosted the homecoming pageant the year before. Like, I did a lot of things that I never would have the confidence to do. I had very little confidence in myself growing up. I still don't, but
you protect others, but you're not too sure of yourself.
No. And I think I something an old supervisor once told me is that I'm always do so well looking out for others that I oftentimes forget about myself.
Yep.
And even just developing myself, developing not just myself physically, but mentally, emotionally, spiritually, like all that stuff. And so something that changed that for me was when I was in Pittsburgh working at a school. I was very alone, felt very alone, very isolated, very overwhelmed, new job. And I think a lot of that mental health stuff started to creep back in.
Uh-huh.
I think it's something that, you know, folks don't talk about, but I know something I wanted to talk about in the show today is just black males just don't want to get help. And I just think it's something that I figured out in grad school, talking to colleagues, that it's just the type of help that I guess, you know, myself as a black man, what I need is different than what can be offered.
Usually offered.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
Sure. I think, you know, I did a lot of studies and research about this in grad school, and just, we have this very Eurocentric model of counseling where it's just one-on-one, you know, you sit in the couch and you talk and you have a great conversation, which to me is like not very helpful at all. I think if you look at, I think of like just DNA, and a lot of people say, well, you know, people of color can have, we have like a rhythm in our DNA. We have drums in our DNA, right? We also have a lot of, in my opinion, other things too that come mm-hmm. with what makes us up and what makes us whole. Mm-hmm. And it just fascinated me that you can go to a barbershop in a black neighborhood, various ages, various identities, various definitions of masculinity. Mm-hmm. But yet to a room of strangers, you can talk about your relationship, talk about your kids,
right.
talk about your work, talk about drama that's going on in your life with your family, and get all this advice from everywhere.
Right.
And then you take it and you feel better. But for some reason, when you go to a one-on-one counseling session, you can't do it. And that was my experience, at least.
Right. No, and I think, so people from my experience who come from a strong pre-modern background where they're not into the modern professional segmented life kind of stuff, mm-hmm. People who come out of it, I come out of a rural community where there was this notion that you did stuff in community. Now there were some people who wanted to keep tight. They bottled it all up all the time. They weren't going to share it with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, they couldn't understand why you would go to a one-on-one conversation,
right.
because that's something you'd do in a little group after church, sitting around eating at a meal or at the barbershop even, or the hairdresser or whatever. I mean, that's where you do those conversations, and you have people who are elders, you know, male or female, and they function in those roles.
Yeah. And I think that what helped me figure that out was actually a group of students I had at Washington Jefferson College where I used to work.
Uh-huh.
And it was a Charles West Fellows program, and it was a group of black male scholars. They were there. It was a recruitment retention program for those males from Western PA. And, you know, being one of the three male staff members of color at the university, I, you know, became their advisor, mm-hmm. and which was super beneficial to them, but really, I would say more
you
beneficial
learned a lot,
than me.
Yeah.
I learned a lot, and we would have these barbershop chats, if you will, just in my apartment. You know, I would invite them all over. We'd have some food. Maybe I'd put on if it was a sport event or video games or whatever, just for us to just hang out. But then we would get into a deep conversation mm-hmm. of who was going through it that week.
Right.
And it was either academics, it was relationships, it was family. Sometimes it was me. And I think that really helped them see that, you know, as a staff member, I'm going through it too. And they also were there to support me and give me advice. And those are friendships.
And it wasn't violating boundaries for you to share what you were going through.
No.
And to be a human with them.
Didn't feel like it to me.
But there are some professional roles where that is explicitly forbidden.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that is the difference between that one-on-one maybe counselor feel where you don't
right.
feel like you know that person you're talking to. To me, they needed to have some trust. And
right.
so they had to trust me enough to share their stuff with me. And so I had to share stuff with them. And I think mutually we all benefited from that little opportunity.
Right.
And so from that, I started to feel better and started mm-hmm. to realize like this is important for me to get mm-hmm. to get that sense of community and to not be so isolated and not force myself to kind of stay in this little area by myself and just figure it out on my own, that I needed that sense of, you know, brotherhood, if you will, and camaraderie.
Right, right. And is there something in addition to the failure of the kind of one-on-one counseling model for men, is there something else that helps to kind of make it so black men like yourself will tend to isolate, will mm-hmm. choose isolation over connection
mm-hmm.
unless somebody kind of invites them? And what causes that?
I think it's a mix of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
There's this idea of a man box. There's a really great TED talk on it. Google it. I can't remember
sure.
the guy's name
yeah,
who
yeah.
did it. It talks a lot about this box that we have to live in. And you know, the only emotion that we can show is anger. We can't show any other emotion or we step outside that box. And if you step outside that box, you're less masculine. You're not where you, you know, you're not what society deems you to be, this masculine person. And so I love trying to dismantle that. I think that is my, that has become my goal since meeting with those students is, you know, having those conversations with them and realizing that they were exhibiting that. They were exhibiting that, like, I can't do this or I can't show emotions. And one of them would cry in a meeting and they would just get so upset and feel so embarrassed. I'm like, no, that this is fine. Like, this is the problem, is that we are not allowed to do that. So we bottle that up.
Right.
And then it is only anger, because now we bottle it up and we have health issues. We have hypertension. We have blood pressure issues. We have eating issues because we just have to find alcohol, drugs, because we have to find other ways to kind of
tamp it down,
to tamper it down, because you're not allowed, you know, in quotes, to feel that way. And so it's very interesting to me that is, because of that, you can't ask for help either. Because if you start to ask for help, you are then jumping outside that box.
Right, right, right. And I've been thinking a lot. It's also really important for people to learn how to handle dangerous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like we did a fire last night, and there was a 10-year-old there, and learning how to hold a marshmallow that caught on fire and bring it to your face and blow it out. Mm-hmm. You know, that's can be a scary thing. But learning how to handle dangerous stuff well, you have to be taught in a certain sense. It has to be modeled and engaged. So it's both the emotional intelligence, but it's also the skill at doing stuff that's really awkward or potentially dangerous.
Yeah, I think that's where socialization comes into play too. Of like, you can be taught this maybe from home, but if the outside world is telling you know, this is how you're supposed to be, or you're not this,
right?
And you know, you're being told from the beginning, and be a man.
Leave people out there, because you know your parents don't know squat about it.
Right. Be a man. This is what being a man means, you know. And that's something that also makes me think about now as a dad, is that how I want to raise my son to make sure that he is not exhibiting that he can be his authentic self and whatever authentic self looks like for him, and not need to feel like he has to stay in this box of what manhood and masculinity feels like. Because if he's ever outside that box, I don't ever want someone telling him he's not being a man at the moment, because that's not who, you know, that's not the type of world I want to live in.
Right. And that sounds like it's also a message that you need to have a whole bunch of people around you sharing that message, that are on, you know, on the same page together. Yes. Not just your partner, but a whole cloud of witnesses.
Yes, that's something that her and I talk about a lot. We're like, I think we're going to tackle this young man, right? But then if we have a daughter, I don't know. I might have to come back on the show.
It's a different set of concerns. And in some ways, it's easier now for girls than for boys. And I think the research is, you know, showing that there are issues, there are specific issues, but in some ways, but there's problems. There are more problems than we know what to do with.
Yeah.
Let's cut to music. What should we play next?
Oh, man. I can't remember what I am.
You go ahead and think about it, and I'll do the stay.
So I think this would actually be great for the Lupe Fiasco song, Hip Hop Saved My Life. That is another piece that I can get to if we have time.
Sure.
But as we talked about...
this is something that forms you.
Yeah, something that shapes me, something that has helped me get through this music.
Right. And where we go from what shapes you, then we go, what did you have to learn that you would have never chosen to learn?
Yeah.
And so we'll go to that later, but we'll continue on what shaped you.
Awesome. Dedicate. This one right here goes out to my homie with the drink. Know what I mean? He said, I write what I see. Right to make it right, don't like what I be. I'd like to make it like the sights on TV. Quite the great life, so nice and easy. See, now you can still die from that, but it's better than not being alive from straps. Agreed, a meat notebook and a big that clip when it's pushed and a whack beat. That's a track that's weak that he got last week, cause everybody in the stool was like, that's that heat. A bass heavy medley with a sample from the 70s with a screwed up hook that went, stack that cheese. Something. Stack that cheese. Mother, sister, cousin. Stack that cheese. He couldn't think of nothing. Stack that cheese. He turns down the beat, writer's block impedes. Crying from the next room, a baby in need of some pampers and some food and a place to sleep. That plus a black Cadillac on D's is what keep him on track to be a great MC. Yeah. One you never heard of, I push it harder for the thug. Rhyme, I feel like murder, but hip hop, you saved me. One you never heard of, I push it harder for the thought. Rhyme, I feel
like murder, but hip-hop, you saved my life.
Reps Northside, so we rocks them braids. 1,100 friends on his MySpace page. Stacked that cheese, got 700 plays. Producer made him take it down, said he had to pay. Open mic champ 2 weeks in a row. XD boy with a B-boy flow. Glow like Leroy, you should see boy go. Got a daddy serving life and a brother on the road. Best homie in the grave, tatted up while in the cage. Minute Maid got his mama working like a slave. Down baby mama, who he really had to honor, cause she was his biggest fan. Even let him use a Honda to drive up to Dallas with, to open up for amateurs. Let him keep a debit card so we could put gas in it. Told her when he get on, he gon' take her to the gallery or buy everything but the mannequin. You dig, dig, dig.
When he never heard of, I push it harder for the crime. I feel like murder, but hip-hop just saved me. When you never heard of, I push it harder for the crime. I feel like murder, but hip-hop just saved my life.
His man Cole said your time might be now. They played your freestyle over Wipe Me Down. They played it 2 times, said it might be crowned as the best thing out the H-Town in a while. He picked up his son with a great big smile, rapped every single word to the newborn child. Then he put him down and went back to the kitchen and put on another beat and got back to the mission to get his mama out the hood, put her somewhere in the woods, keep his lady looking good, have her rolling like she should. Show his homies this away, other than that flipping yay. Bell his homie out of jail, put a lawyer on his case, throw a concert for the school, show the shoulders that is cool, throw some candy on the cat and chuck the deuce and act a fool. Man, it feels good when it happens like that. 2 days from going back to yes, sir, 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 sir.
When you never heard of, I push it harder for the crime. I feel like murder, but hip-hop just saved me. When you never heard of, I push it harder for the crime. I feel like murder, but hip-hop just saved my life. When you never heard of, push it harder for the crime. I feel like murder.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Devin Carrington. So, Devin, and this is part of the, you know, what are the experiences that have shaped you?
Sure. Music has definitely helped me. I mentioned to you earlier, I've been DJing for roughly 11 years now. Had a little stint in a radio show in college. Did a lot of, you know, bars and restaurants that are near me in college. I did some weddings, some high school proms, done a little bit of everything. And recently I've been able to inject myself into the DJ scene of Ithaca. There are so many DJs here.
This is rich with DJs.
Yes. Any DJs listen to this, like, shout out to Ithaca DJs. Like, there are a lot of us. We all have different music genres. We all have the ability to captivate an audience from all over. And I think if there's an opportunity for all of us to get together and just do like a huge event, anyone in this town can go and still hear what they want to hear, which I think would be amazing. Cause the power of music and bringing community together is so powerful. And that to me is one of the reasons why I like DJing. For me, I just love music. I love hearing new music. I love getting new music. I love going out, getting requests from folks,
right,
and I don't have the song. Oh, I love it. So I can take it home. I can write it down, take it home, listen to it, see how I can mix it in. It's very much a puzzle to me, and like, how can I, you know, keep this crowd on the dance floor, but then bring more people who aren't on the dance floor? Like, how do I get them engaged with this crowd? And to be able to know, like, you're the person controlling that is super fun and really interesting. Another thing that's really impactful about DJing that just lights up my world is doing a wedding. It's a lot of work because you're also emceeing, you're also the host, you have to be a lot of personality. So also getting outside my comfort zone and doing that. But hitting play on someone's like first dance is just so magical to me. You know, it's such a feeling that, like only, I guess, DJs and folks can really understand that. Cause that's like the first time as a couple they're showing their love, if you will, to the whole community.
Right.
And you're the one giving them, you're the catalyst for that. You're starting the music that they chose that represents them as a couple, or that now represent them as a couple, because some couples have come to me and said, I don't know what we want to dance to, you pick it. And I'm like, okay, I'll go.
So tell me a little bit.
Yeah, so I do that. I tell me a little about yourself. Like, how'd you meet? Like, what is a very important thing for you and your relationship? And so I do try to come up with the best song for them, and then that becomes their song. Oh, it's like a magical thing to me. And just, it brings back to that, like, protecting and serving the community, you know? I really just love serving the community. I don't... I'm not when I'm at, you know, Silky Jones in town, for example, or Lot 10, I don't bring my microphone. I don't like talking. I don't like interrupting the mood. I will speak if I need to. If the owner or establishment needs me to make an announcement, I'll do that. But I don't like to interrupt the mood. I just want I want the music to be what it is. You know, I'm playing other people's art, and so like for me to interrupt that with my whatever, it's just not.
Yeah, I mean, you. It sounds like you also like to be a little bit invisible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the know, in the control, but also a little invisible.
Yeah.
It's just powerful.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. I love when I have a booth and I'm like off to the side. There are some places I've DJed where you're like in a table right in the middle, or you're like right in front of everyone and everyone's just like looking at you and like, no, I'm not the performer. I am your Sherpa. I am your party Sherpa. I just want to make sure this party gets from 9 o'clock when I start, or 10 o'clock when I start, to 1 or 2 a.m. when I'm done.
Right.
That you all have the greatest time you can from start to finish, and that you hear music you love. You hear music that
makes you've never you think heard before,
that you never heard before. Yeah. You hear versions of song that make you rethink a song. You know, I think there are opportunities for DJs to really make an impact on people's mind, mm-hmm. on people's soul, and like really for that 3 hours, you can really take someone away from what they've been dealing with. And that to me is like super powerful when mm-hmm. it comes to DJing. You know, they can come in and say like, oh, you know, me and my friends are gonna go out tonight. I had a rough week. Like, I just need to go out and I just want to have like one drink. But then you go in and the DJ is doing their thing and you stick around and you get your cardiovascular heart rate up, you know, cause you're dancing. Or, you know, maybe you don't drink to oblivion because you're too distracted by the party, and you know, sure. That really can help shape a night and really shape the rest of your week, or really like help you forget about the stuff that you dealt with the week prior.
Right. I mean, it's kind of a submitting, and it's letting yourself go into more of an ecstatic experience or mm-hmm. a whole engaged experience.
Yeah.
And we don't think about the rituals that let that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
it's awesome.
Powerful stuff.
And the community that can be made in that too. Mm-hmm. You know, if you, I've seen several of my friends who I've invited out, like new to Ithaca, and I'm like, oh, come to one of my gigs. Like, you at least know me. Like, I play mm-hmm. this type of music. They'll come and meet other people.
Right.
And, you know, or I'll meet someone, or I'll know someone in the crowd, and I'm like, oh, hey, this is my friend so-and-so, and able to make some connections for folks there. To me is also a big part of what this role is as a DJ, is like, right. you know, you're kind of helping folks get through.
Right. And the way you just raised that is going to allow me to kind of tackle something I haven't tackled on the show before.
Sure.
And that is, when people are new and unfamiliar in a situation, it's not just that they don't know anybody. Like if you know, they could know names ahead of time, but people are awkward in their whole bodies and they're emotionally don't know quite what to feel and or they feel awkward and they don't have, like you were saying before, you get stuck in anger because it's the only emotion you feel. You get stuck in awkwardness because you don't know what to do. But in your DJ role, you can invite people to get comfortable with their bodies, to take them less seriously, to be a little bit less judgmental, and to be open to just being physically with other people.
Yes.
And talking, and there is some intellectual stuff, there's some emotional stuff, there's some physical, it's deeply spiritual.
Yes.
And we don't cultivate our relationships with real honesty toward the need to do that.
Yes. Like you said, we're awkward. We come out the womb awkward, you know. Everybody's just an awkward being. And we also live in a world of assumptions. I think we just have a basic human instinct to assume,
or to wonder, and you know, and when you can't fill in the wonder, then you, or you can't ask,
yeah,
you assume,
yeah, and you can't, you know, you need to assume to parallel park a car. Like, you have to assume this chair I'm sitting in is going to hold me up. You know, it's just a basic form of protection. I think it's also a lot of times
trust,
yeah.
And then in this sense, when you assume trust, it means that I'm gonna risk this because it's good.
Yes.
And if I don't risk it, I'm not going to have a good experience.
Right, right. And like, music will help break that down.
Yeah.
Because if you're in there and one of your favorite songs come on, and for you, it's one of the, it just speaks to you, it's meaningful, it just makes you want to dance. And then you see someone across the way you've never seen before in your life also get that same visceral reaction to the song. Yep. That's an ultimate icebreaker right there. It's like, getting able to, there's a really great team builder and icebreaker activity that I've done in the past where, you know, it was seen in Freedom Riders where you cross the line if you had these shared experiences and, you know, you have all this animosity maybe in a group and then you're crossing this line if you have the same shared, you know, tragedy that happened in your life and that really brings you together. Music has the same impact because it's able to really bring folks together in a way that they may not even realize, people that they have never met or never seen before who might be around the corner from them or at the same university or same job or whatever, have the same visceral reaction to a song that you thought you loved. Right. Not only is the DJ playing it because they like it, you also have someone else in the crowd who really enjoys the song. And to see groups come together, no drama, no issues, no isms. It's just music. And it really is super beneficial to have that be a part of the community here in Ithaca, because there are so many of us doing this around town.
And so how long have you been in Ithaca?
Oh, whew, 3 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So long enough to feel like you're getting to know the place.
I think so.
Yeah. And it's an unusual place. It's not an easy place to get to know. And because of your role at Cornell, you have an experience of the need to do instant community, and people are somewhat open to that. Students generally are. As a place, because I've been here for most of the last 42 years, 32 of the last 42 years, and it's a place where they're like, I see it as 10,000 micro communities.
Yes.
And people just don't know each other across the spaces. And partly we have all of these DJs, in part because we have all of these niches that need to be served.
Absolutely.
And all of these different dance groups and musical groups and whatnot. But there's a quality of much of the time friendliness, but not intimacy.
Mm.
Not a sense of personal connection or how to kind of break that path or break that, open that possibility. In your work and in your building a community around your son and with your partner, how is that? How are you seeing the reaching out to that visceral, emotional, intellectual community, spiritual community? How are you working that?
That has been something that I think I'm still trying to figure out here in Ithaca, of like ways to do that for myself personally, and then ways to help maybe usher that cross communication with these little groups. That's something that I have not just, but in the past like couple months have really noticed,
right,
that there are these little groups. And I remember when I first started to, you know, before I met my partner and I first got here and I started to like just go out downtown. I'm a person, type of person where I do like to, you know, keep to myself, but I'll go out by myself. I'll just go to a local bar, sit and just talk to folks. And so that's something that's become relatively new in my life, of just knowing that sense of community is important. And so I remember doing that. And I remember the first couple of times I did that, mentioning that I worked at Cornell, put me in a community that maybe not be the same community as the person I'm talking to. And so that
it may have put a barrier between you.
Yes. Put a barrier between us, cause a little bit of that awkwardness to happen, cause a little bit of that, like, I don't want to say tension. Like, I can't think of a better word.
Right. No, but it is. People get rigid.
Yeah.
When they get nervous or anxious or labeled.
Yes. Cause they immediately throw certain assumptions on you that you work at Cornell, you must be X, or you are born and raised Ithaca, you must be this. Right. And that's something that, I'm from New York City. I'm from Queens, New York. And so that's something that doesn't really, to me, I didn't exist growing up. Like, that's not an ideal or a thing that I ever thought of when I grew up, of like,
you're just one of a million people.
Yeah.
2 million people.
We're all from Queens. You know, like, we're just all, and everybody from Queens is different. Everybody's little block is different. You know, you can't assume that because you're from this, right? So anyway, so it's very interesting. So I stopped saying I worked at Cornell.
Right.
And taking that part of my identity away just to fit in, if you will, in other communities here in Ithaca was very interesting. And so it's something I'm still trying to navigate, still trying to figure out how to do that. With me and my partner and my son, we've been able to find a new community of young parents and young families that are in town. And so we found some community there, especially my partner. She's a part of this like mom's group.
Yeah, and that's often in this culture where we don't have strong community, the place where people find it are as they are young parents.
Yes.
And they find it among people in their generational group. What it misses is the kind of the wisdom of the elders around them.
Yes.
And the bigger patchwork.
Yes. And it's very interesting to see, like, we'll go around town and, you know, we'll get funny looks, or, you know, my partner is nursing, we'll get funny looks, and it's usually from older people. And we're like,
yeah.
I don't assume you had children, but, like, come on, you got to understand if you did have children, that what we're going through right now as a young couple.
And yes and no, because having children 50 years ago was a different proposition in some ways than having them 30 years ago or having That's them true. Now. I mean,
yeah,
I've been through, my oldest siblings had them nearly 50 years ago and I had them 30 years ago and I'm watching people have them now.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch gears just a little bit. What have you had to learn about life yourself that you didn't really want to accept, but it's proven helpful? Mm. Is there anything that falls into that category?
There's two things I think of that I need help.
You need help. Yeah.
I stuck in that man box, very prideful, very much like, I'm good. You know, that's like literally anyone who knows me knows that's my favorite thing to say. Oh, I'm good. But no, like, I'm not. And so to know that I needed help with something, it took me until, what am I, 20, 29? It took me until 28 to figure that out.
Right.
That I needed to stop and get myself some help and ask for help and ask for help from my partner and ask for help from my friends. A lot of my close friends had no idea what was going on with me, and they were my best friends.
Right.
And for them to hear and to learn this is happening was like, whoa, you seemed fine. And 'cause I did a really good job of faking it.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot the other thing I was going to say.
Well, so just stay with, you know, there were two, you said there were two things, and one of them was help.
Yeah.
And asking for help. So how did it come? How could you no longer deny? What happened that made it so you could begin to ask for help without the wall of shame or the wall of inferiority kicking itself up so high that you wouldn't do it?
I had my son.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think that is what changed it for me. Because I realized it wasn't about just me anymore. I couldn't, be that selfish. You know, I had to get help because for him and my partner, now I have to protect and serve them.
Right.
And so I have to be here. I have to be around. I have to be 100%. And to me, I wasn't.
Right. And I hear the intense desire to fulfill your role.
Mm-hmm.
But I also hear perfectionism.
Mm, yep.
And that also sometimes undermines our ability to ask for help.
Yep.
And it's a tough to want something so much, but also to forgive yourself for failing.
Yes.
And to allow others to try to help you and not succeed, but continue to love.
Yes. And that was the second thing, is the forgiving myself. I think I spent a lot of my life comparing myself to others. I still do. Others that I don't even know. I'm comparing myself to people I've never met. Just as I see them on TV.
And you assume yeah. Like we talked about them.
Yeah. I think I spent a lot of time in high school comparing myself to friends, comparing my skill in the football field to others, and which then made me not better, which still something I think about to this day, what my life could have been differently if I stopped comparing myself to others and really worked on my own physical strength and physical capabilities. And thinking about even now, social media is the devil to me,
right?
Because I constantly compare myself to others on that platform or Facebook or Instagram. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I am going to get rid of at some point. I got to get rid of it because it's not helping. But
right, but it's a reality.
It's a reality.
And you work with kids for whom it's an even bigger reality than it is for you. So you can't completely get rid of it.
That's why I stick around.
But there has to be some boundary that you acknowledge that that is beyond me or that is not me or whatever. I mean, and being clear about that, you know, discovering what clarity is about that is a lot of work.
Yes. Yes. And that's something that I continue to work on is that to not compare myself and not and to realize like what's reality and what's not, and to live in my true self is what I'm striving to do and striving to be, but can't help but you know some of that stuff still creeps in, some of that self-doubt. Even with this new job, I got a promotion, to be in a job two years and some change. To get a promotion already in this field is something I should be extremely proud of. And everyone is telling me, like, this is phenomenal. Hey. Everyone is so happy for me. But I was, like, the last one who was super excited about it because I just kept getting that imposter syndrome, kept getting that, was this, just doesn't feel right. You know, this doesn't feel right. Something's about to change.
And so, but one of the issues here is that, is it that you are a full blown imposter, or is it that you're just afraid of failing because you don't have the confidence to just say, this is a task, I will give it my best. Some things will work, some things won't work. You know, if you're an imposter, then you are faking it on some level. But if you are just not sure if you're up to it, that's a slightly different issue. Because I've experienced both. I come from pretty severe rural poverty, and I couldn't speak standard English coming to Cornell, and I got teased out of my accent, and I got, so I kind of know a little bit about what that's about. I'm also very perceptive, and I was always the guy who helped other people run for office in student politics, and we used the Black Power sign in my white school, and it was acceptable because we could, it wasn't a cultural appropriation, it was a poor people's appropriation in that sense. So I could learn how to move in and out of lots of different environments, but who was I in that process? And then once I had a sense of who was I, and I could be kind of aggressive or I could be kind, when was I being critical in a way that was helpful? And when was I being critical in a way that was hurtful? Because you're going to hurt people sometimes when you help them grow.
Right.
And you got to be able to kind of maintain your composure. But if you get defensive in reaction to their defensiveness, then everybody's fake.
Yeah.
Because we're just lost. Yeah. And that's not imposter. That's just not skillful.
Yeah. Everyone come on Eric's show. Everyone who's listening to this, please come on his show. Wow.
And this is really wonderful, wonderful
stuff.
And that's why we do this. That's why I do this, is to be able to engage in this way, a personal, not private, it's personal.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who knows you is going to sense some of this stuff, whether you talk about it or not. You surprise people, but I think people aren't as surprised as they are just not paying attention.
Yes.
People who are paying attention see a lot. Mm-hmm. And if you're not seeing, it's just you're not looking in many instances. Some people are good hiders. Let me get out of this line. Let's switch gears. Yeah.
Sure.
What should we cut to music before we go to the last segment of the show?
Sure. I think The Roots, The Fire. I love The Roots as a band. They were here like this last summer. Totally missed it. Really upset at myself. But I have two tracks on here from them, but The Fire is just another song that just speaks to resiliency and really pushing through. And that's something that I'm trying to remind myself that I've done this whole lifetime, is just pushing through.
Right. And you maintain, you can do that with less harshness.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just loyalty. Sometimes it's just kind of getting up each day and doing the right thing without a lot of self-judgment.
Right.
Here we go.
grows and start feeling mixed signals like Morse code. My soul start to grow colder than the North Pole. I try to focus on the hole of where the torch goes. In the tradition of these legendary sports pros, as far as I can see, I've made it to the threshold. Lord knows I waited for this a lifetime, and I'm an icon when I let my light shine. Shine bright as an example of a champion, taking the advantage, never copping out or canceling. Burn like a chariot, learn how to carry it. Maverick, always above and beyond average. Fuel to the flame that I train with and travel with. Something in my eyes say I'm so close to having a prize. I realize I'm supposed to reach for the skies. Never let somebody try to tell you otherwise.
That's something in your heart.
One game, one desire, one flame, one bonfire, let it burn higher. I never show signs of fatigue or turn tired, cause I'm the definition of tragedy turned triumph. It's David and Goliath, I made it to the eye of the storm, feeling torn like they fed me to the lions. Before my time start to wind down like the Mayans, I show them how I got to grind down like a science. It sounds like a riot on hush, it's so quiet, the only thing I hear is my heart. I'm inspired by the challenge that I find myself standing eye to eye with, the move like a wise warrior and not a coward. You can't escape the history that you was meant to make. That's why the highest victory is what I'm meant to take. You came to celebrate, I came to celebrate. I hate losing, I refuse to make the same mistakes.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Devin Carrington. So, Devin, the question that we close the show out with is, what do you do to take care of yourself? On a, you know, throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, emotionally, physically, intellectually, spiritually, and how do you know you need to do it?
So, I actually have become a really strong advocate for self-care, especially for young professionals and employees that I work with. I've been talking to them a lot about the developing your self-care plan and what that looks like. And we talk a lot about self-care feeling selfish,
right,
and how people will put on you, you know, if you ask what I do during the day or what I do immediately at work, I go for a walk. I'd like to make sure physically that I'm in a good space. Make sure, like, mentally I'm in a good space. And for me, that's like getting away from my desk. Cornell University is a very like email heavy university. Everyone's all on an email. You can leave one day and come Tuesday morning, you'll have 170 emails in your inbox,
right,
and you'll have to reply to all of them. And, you know, just to be able to, you know, power through that and then go for a walk. Oftentimes I'm meeting with students and they come to my office and say, can we take a walk? Like, can we walk and talk?
Right.
And I do that.
And actually, so, that's sometimes the best conversation, because you're not, it's the one-on-one thing. You're not facing each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm really able to hopefully, you know, continue to do that. Music is a big part of my, once again, like my woosah is music.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have it on my desk all the time. You know, if I'm really stressed out, I tell my staff, the louder it is, the more stressed I am. If it's loud, then that means like, don't bother me, you know? If it's lower, like you barely can hear it, but you hear it when you come to my desk, then okay, that means I'm in a good spirit, I'm in a good mood. That's been really helpful. And I think, you know, another thing that really helps me out is, you know, I get to go to daycare and pick up my son, you know, but somewhere between right after 5 o'clock, I go pick him up and he lights up when he sees us, crawls right to us. And he's, you know, and they tell us he had a great day. That to me is awesome. That to me is what made the whole day worth it.
Sure.
Because, you know, you do all this work, you know, you're making this money and it's for them. It's right. it's for my son. It's right. for my partner. And so to see them at the end of the day is super, super beneficial to me. And like what I do to get through life, has been them. And like right now this weekend, I'm so beat, so tired just from just working constantly. It's like right. the first weekend I've had off fully in a long time. And
I'm glad you could spend some of it here.
That's why it took us so long. Yeah. Every time I'm like, oh, I can't even think about when I have free time. But, and you know, my partner's been great. You know, she let me sleep in yesterday morning and, you know, took our son and went and go visited a friend in town, and I was able to sleep in to the point I woke up and was like, where's everybody? You know, what's right. going on? You know, right. she didn't even say that. She just did it for me. And I think that was so, I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause even with us, even with, you know, a young child, some people are like, well, you're still not going to have a day off if you will. Once you get home, dads and moms can't take days off. But you can if you help each other. And right. I think that is right. a big part of.
And if you have a network of people around you, you can even take time together off.
Yes.
Somebody can take this.
Yes. Yeah. Which we're so looking forward to at some point. Yeah. Yeah. But we are still, you know, financially, we're like, well, let's just, you know, let's save for this house.
No, but I mean, but also when you have a network of friends and a strong community, yes. then you don't always have to pay for what you need.
Yes.
Or you pay yes. it forward by doing it for others.
Yes, and yeah. even someone...
Or somebody does it
for you. His godfather is Cornell Woodson, and he'll come to the house and just hold him for a little bit. And we're yeah. like, oh, awesome. We can, like, wash dishes, or yep. we can vacuum, or we can do something around yeah. the house that, yep. you know, we couldn't do because, yeah. you know, he either is really needy today or really cuddly or just wants to nap all day. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, there goes that.
And... letting other people care for you is kind of a first step to asking for help sometimes.
Yep.
Or if you're just beginning to consider asking for help, one way to not have to ask, but to have the experience is to let other people do what they want to do for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's still one of the hardest things yeah. for me is asking for help. And then couple that with being so protective of my son.
Right.
It's like,
yeah, yeah.
Who do I trust to hold him for right. a little bit? And
right.
if they are holding him, who do I trust them even more to leave while they're holding
yeah,
him?
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, there are very few people on that list. To my partner, I think it's even smaller.
Right. And that's yeah, not uncommon. Not
yeah.
uncommon. So, Devin, what should we close with musically?
I think one of my favorite songs of all time is Nas, If I Rule the World. I think it's something I'm not trying to rule the world, because we talked about it today, not trying to be perfectionist, but... it's something that I'm trying to get to. I'm trying to feel like I do. Uh-huh. I'm trying to feel like I can master. Like
you've engaged the world.
Yeah, like I've
you're up for it.
Engaged communities across the globe and yep. been able to learn how to interact with others and learn how to support others as best as I can.
Devin, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Same, Eric. Thank Here you so go. Much.
Will it take me under? I don't know. Imagine smoking weed in the street without cops harassing. Imagine going to court with no trial. Lifestyle cruising blue Bahama waters. No welfare supporters. More conscious of the way we raise our daughters. Days are shorter, nights are colder. Feeling like life is over. These snakes strike like a cobra. The world's hot, my son got knocked. Evidently, it's elementary. They want us all gone eventually. Trooping out of state for a plate. Knowledge, if coke was cooked without the garbage, we'd all have the top dollars. Imagine everybody flashing, fashion, designer clothes. Lacing your click up with diamond rolls. Your people's holding dough, no parole, no rubbers. Going raw, imagine law with no undercovers. Just some thoughts for the mind. I take a glimpse into time. Watch the blimp read, the world is mine.
If I rule the world,
imagine that.
I free all my sons. I love them, baby. Black diamonds and pearls.
Could it be, if you could be mine, we both shine.
If I rule the world,
still living for today.
in these last days until where to be. Paradise life relaxing, black, Latino, and Anglo-Saxon. Armani exchange the range, cast, lost tribe of Shabazz, free at last, brand new whips to crash. Then we laugh in the iller path, the villa houses for the crew, how we do. Trees for breakfast, dime sexes have been stretches. So many years of depression make me vision the better living, type of place to raise kids in. Opening eyes to the lies, history's told foul, but I'm as wise as the old owl, plus the gold child, seeing things like I was controlling, click rolling, tricking six digits on kicks and still.